Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Oi with a Terror. I am one of your hosts, Danielle.
And I'm your other host, Sandra.
I didn't really think of, like, what to say now. Because we were just talking about other stuff randomly, so now I'm, like, thinking. Yeah, I guess I thought that the episode after this was going to be our 100th, because I've keep folders in my Google Drive, like that's where I keep my stories and whatnot, and I think I like accidentally did two like duplicate folders once, so we still have two more episodes till the 100th, which will be exciting.
Yes, we do, which is also kind of crazy because at least I think in March it'll be 3 years since we started. Or since we at least released the first episode.
Yeah. And then had a little sabbatical
for a bit. So that's kind of crazy. That's okay. Considering we were recording and releasing, what, two episodes a month?
This bi-weekly schedule is good, though.
Yeah, it's definitely better. Less stressful.
So I'm excited. My topic this week, or by week, which you actually told me to do. You, like, demanded it, if I remember correct. No.
I did not demand it. You just, like, lightly
suggested
it. I mentioned it.
By the way, this is a cool topic. And I'm like, yeah.
And by the way, I suggest many topics to you. 50-50 that you're going to do them.
I try to find them organically, I guess, in a way. Like, when I just randomly turned on the TV and there was a very scary show on, and then there were, like, so many good topics from that. Like, I try to get, like, inspired that way, I guess. But, yeah, some the topics you send me, I definitely have more that I could do. But, yeah, the one you reminded me of recently, there's been... It's definitely going to have to be a two-parter. So, like, the amount I have now is almost 4 pages double-spaced. And this is, like, just the first part. Actually, almost 4.5 pages double-spaced. So I think that's probably enough for this time. But it's the Natalie Holloway case. And it's just gone on for, like... Not a crazy amount of time, but it feels like it's been a long amount of time just because there's been so much, like, media coverage with this topic, and it's been talked about so much and, like, covered in the news and everything. So it just feels like it's been going on for a lot longer. Like, at least to me, it kind of felt like that. Because there are so many, like, unsolved cases that have gone on for longer, and then there's an update like 50 years later, so it's not like that extreme, but there are a lot of factors with like this that make it, I feel like, interesting. But there was, it was in October of last year where there was a pretty big update, so I'll go more into like more details about the update in the second part, and then this part is just more about like the background and what happened initially with her disappearance and like the initial reception of what happened. So I'm sure most people have heard of the Natalie Holloway case at some point. She was legally declared dead in 2012, and recently in October 2023, long-term suspect Joran Vandersloot actually admitted to the murder. Which I remember even from the beginning, he was considered a suspect, but it just seemed like the like main reason was insufficient evidence that he wasn't initially arrested. And he was arrested a few times, but he wasn't like put away. But after reading about his background, it seems like there was also another factor because he had connections and things like that that probably helped him as well. So I'll go in more into detail with that later. So Natalie Holloway was a beautiful, blonde, straight-A student who went missing on May 30th, 2005, after going to Aruba for a dream vacation along with her senior classmates from Mountain Brook High School. A search started immediately, and I remember we were talking about this, and you remembered saying that, like, in a way, when this first happened, it kind of impacted you, because I think you said your parents were, like, got more nervous about traveling. How old were we in 2005? That was, like,
well, because in, so, yeah, so in 2005 we were 13, but I have an older sister who was around her same age. So I think Natalie was 18 and my sister was around 17. So it was kind of that situation where it wasn't just my parents. It was just a lot of people were really kind of nervous about, you know, sending kids on these trips. And, you know, in Aruba, it is the legal age to drink is 18, I think, whereas in the States it's 21. So it's that too.
Right. Yeah, I definitely wasn't traveling anywhere at that age, but I remember it, like, for a while after that, like, a lot of people were like, oh no, like, using it as an example, like, be careful because of the Natalie Holloway case, like, it seemed like everyone was talking about it. But yeah, the fact that it was, like, I think I read 150 students from the high school went, seniors, along with seven chaperones. Her parents kind of actually had mixed feelings about her going, but she had a stepbrother who actually went a few years earlier, and her mom said, oh, there's, like, more than 100 people going, and there are chaperones, and there was always safety in numbers, so it will probably be fine. But it sounded like her dad was more kind of hesitant about her going at all initially. After she disappeared, a search started immediately, and this consisted of private investigators, local police. Despite countless leads and investigations, Natalie was never found, and her disappearance remained a mystery for over 18 years. But her parents never gave up hope, and her father, Dave Holloway, appeared on Oxygen's The Disappearance of Natalie Holloway in 2017 to help chase down any potential leads. Natalie's mother, Beth, became a public speaker and an advisor to families in similar situations with missing loved ones, and both her parents have written books about this as well. So Natalie was born on October 21st, 1986, in Tennessee. Her younger brother, Matthew, was born in 1988, and her parents, Beth and Dave, divorced in 1993 when she was 7 years old. She and her brother were primarily raised by their mother, Beth, and in 2000, she remarried George Jug Tweedy, and their family moved to Mountain Brook, Alabama, a suburb of Birmingham. Natalie flourished at Mountain Brook High School, where she received straight A's, was a member of the National Honor Society, student government, and the high school dance team. And she also volunteered regularly for a group called Natural Helpers, where she worked as a peer counselor, and a group called American Field Source, which was a group that worked with exchange students. So sounds like she was very busy, had, like, the classic attributes of, like, responsible, dependable, kind of, like, made me think of some students, some of our peers, where I would always look at them and be like, how are you able to function right now? Like, you're just a part of, like, four different groups and have straight A's and look like you're, like, put together. Like, I don't understand this. But so maybe some pressure and whatnot, like, I would imagine. So because of all her accomplishments, she actually received a full scholarship to the University of Alabama. She was planning to study pre-med and was looking forward to rushing a sorority. So Natalie, along with over 100 of her classmates, went on a 5-day graduation trip to Aruba in May 2005. Could you imagine if our school was like, want to go to Aruba for 5 days?
No.
I think we had a Six Flags trip. Was that middle school or high school? There was like a Six Flags trip.
We would not get Aruba. That was eighth grade. So that was middle school. In high school? No, we got nothing. We got congratulations, you survived. Here's your diploma.
I'm so curious how that was organized and, like, paid for and stuff. And yeah, that's kind of fascinating, actually.
I don't know of a lot of high schools that do that. I think I this is only like
seems kind of rare.
Maybe it's more of like a southern thing than a northern thing. I don't know. Right. Maybe. But no, our high school would have never done that.
It was definitely like some wealthy parent or something is like, oh my god, Aruba's amazing. Like maybe the chaperones were just like, we have to do this.
Or they might have done it.
Some teachers really wanted to go and they just like pitched it as an idea for the kids.
Maybe. Or they might have done it through fundraising. Maybe it's like every school gets to do it.
I didn't look into the details of how this was established, but I'm just like kind of curious.
In all of the documentaries I've watched on Natalie Holloway, I don't remember.
They didn't focus on how this was created.
They just said they're going to Aruba. Okay.
Also, 150 or over 100 classmates plus 7 chaperones. That kind of sounds intense.
Yeah, but it also doesn't sound like it's enough chaperones per student. Like, the ratio is definitely off.
Yeah. It's like a lifeboat Titanic situation. I would compare it. Yeah. Her father was initially unsure about Natalie attending the trip. She was 18 at the time and was very excited to go on an adventure. And I'm sure with like the amount she probably worked for her grades and everything, maybe she just wanted to blow off steam as well, I'm guessing, especially when you're 18. Her mother, it seemed like, was less hesitant because her stepson had gone on the same trip a few years earlier and she thought it was safe enough because of the amount of people going. But on the morning of May 30th, 2005, the final day of the trip, her parents received a call from one of the 7 chaperones that all parents dread. Natalie wasn't at the airport and hadn't shown up to the return flight and was missing. This was totally out of character for Natalie, who was known for her responsibility and, like, not showing up to something like this doesn't make sense at all. So her mom, Beth, immediately knew that something terrible must have happened to her. And apparently she actually thought initially that Natalie had either been kidnapped or murdered. Natalie was last seen with friends at Carlos and Charlie's, a popular bar and restaurant on Ornstead, Aruba. After the bar closed, she was spotted leaving a white car with 3 males at around 1:30 in the morning. The men were later identified as Joran Vandersloot, at the time 17, and brothers Deepak Kalpo, 21, and Satish Kalpo, 19. Natalie's friend Jessica Kayola recalled watching Natalie drive away with the 3 men, and she was sure it was Natalie because Natalie's window was actually rolled down. And apparently when Jessica saw this, she was happy that Natalie found a ride back to the hotel. Which, when I read that, I was like, that's a little weird, right? Like, you're at this new place and you're like, oh great, my friend's in a car with 3 guys I'm happy about. I don't know. Does it seem weird?
I mean, I don't think it seems weird because it was probably a mix of like, she's happy she's got a ride back. That means like I get to, you know, stay or whatever. Like, you know, good for her for getting a ride back. At least she'll be safe. So maybe in that way, but considering what happened, I feel awful for her friends.
Yeah.
But I can kind of understand, like, okay, glad you got, like, a ride home kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't know if I would have that reaction.
I also think that she may have had this reaction because apparently Joran was hanging out with their group, like, pretty much that entire week. So it seems like he wasn't a total stranger. Like, they knew him for a few days. Like, it seemed like he was talking to Natalie, like, almost the entire time they were there.
Yeah.
I didn't read if he was staying at their hotel, but apparently he was, like, hanging out at the casino at the hotel.
Yeah, from what I understand, he liked to hang out at the casino a lot. And obviously at the casino you're going to meet, like, the tourists and the younger kids. Because I think the gambling age in Aruba is also 18. So that's where they're going to go and hang out.
Hmm. So that may explain why her friend wasn't immediately concerned by her friend drive away, I guess.
It could have also been, like, a, you know, good for her. Like, I'm glad she's, you know, talking to guys and, you know how you're excited for your friends when they're...
Yeah. Yeah. And they're, like, the same age, too. So it's not like he was, like,
you know,
much older. So they could have been, like, less on guard mm-hmm. because of that. Natalie's twin cousins were also on the trip, and they were the ones who were called seeing Euron in the hotel casino earlier that same evening that Natalie was last seen. Euron Vandersloot was a Dutch national living in Aruba as a student while he attended the International School of Aruba. He, like Natalie, was an honor roll student, but it sounds like he also had a reputation for partying a lot. Kimberly Bouquet, an acquaintance of Euron's, said he loved to party, especially with American tourists, especially if they were blonde girls. So the following summer, after Natalie disappeared, multiple people were arrested, but no charges were filed. On June 5th, 2005, Antonius Mickey John and Abraham Jones, two former security guards, were arrested. It sounds like based on the descriptions given from Vandersloot and his friends to the police. The Calpo brothers told the police they dropped off Natalie at the hotel around 2 a.m. And after they dropped her off, they saw a man in a security guard uniform approaching her. And they said that was the last time they saw her. Then Euron, along with the brothers, were arrested on June 9th, 2005. A week after that, a fourth man was arrested, a 26-year-old party boat DJ, Steve Gregory Crows. And then on June 23rd, Euron's own father, Paulus, a lawyer undergoing training to become a judge, was also arrested in connection to Natalie's disappearance. But all five men were later released by September of that same year. But Euron and the brothers were still under investigation. They were arrested a second time in November 2007. With the knowledge of new evidence, all three were charged with the involvement in the voluntary manslaughter of Natalie Holloway, or causing serious bodily harm to Natalie Holloway, resulting in her death. But again, all three were released in December 2007, and all charges were dismissed. The Aruban Public Prosecutor's Office concluded a lack of sufficient evidence to prove whether Natalie Holloway died from a crime of violence at the hands of the three suspects. I do remember whenever I hear news or an update about this, Vandersloot was always thought of as the main suspect. And I think this was in part because he made multiple false confessions about her disappearance. So over the years, whenever he talked to someone from the press or investigators, he would give like varying accounts of what happened and like his alibi. In February 2008, a Dutch TV station aired a confession allegedly made by Vandersloot and captured on a hidden camera by Patrick van der Em, a businessman working undercover for a Dutch journalist. In the video, Vandersloot tells the journalist that Natalie died of a drug overdose on the beach and that he and a friend dumped her body in the ocean. And apparently Vandersloot said that she will never be found. But later he told Dutch television show Paw and Whitman that he lied and he just told the journalist what he wanted him to say. In November 2008, Vandersloot appeared on Fox News with Greta Van Susteren and confessed to selling Natalie into a sex trafficking ring for $10,000. He also provided a recording in which he speaks to his father about the crime allegedly, but the like validity of the recording is in dispute. And then 8 hours after that interview, he actually emailed Fox News saying that he lied. His false confessions continued in 2010. In February of that year, Dutch tabloid Telegraph reported that the year earlier, Van der Sloot recorded an interview with TV station RTL5, claiming he brought Natalie to a friend's house, and they proceeded to drink whiskey and use cocaine. He claimed that she then fell off a balcony to her death, and he decided to hide her body in a swamp. But then the Aruban Justice Department came out, and they said that they actually knew about all these claims by Van der Sloot, and they had investigated them, but found all his statements entirely unbelievable. So, pretty suspicious. And then another alleged confession came in February 2016. An undercover operative working on behalf of Radar Online and the National Enquirer secretly filmed Van der Sloot in a Peruvian prison. I almost said princess. In a Peruvian prison, confessing to Natalie's murder. He began a 28-year sentence in 2012 for the murder of Stephanie Flores Ramirez. I don't know if I know about that.
Oh, yeah, that was...
So in the video, you do?
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Okay. You let me... My topic after them. Okay. In the video, Van der Sloot says that he always lied to the police, never told the truth, and that he was guilty in the Holloway case. And the Holloway family dismissed the statements as publicity stunts rather than the truth. So now, saying that out loud, it is coming back to me that, like, part of why he seemed super sketchy was he was, like, totally okay with doing all these interviews. Like, it reminds me of other well-known, like, serial killers, or like some of them thrive in the spotlight. Like, they just, like, it's one of the recurring traits with some of them. Like, they need to talk to people, like, even if their stories make no sense. And those are, like, the most frustrating types of, like, criminals, because you don't know when they're ever telling the truth, really.
Yeah.
But it definitely, like, reminds me of other, like, cases I've read about. So I will end there with part one. And part two is more about Van der Sloot being sketchy and what happens in 2010. So, yeah.
All right. Well, yeah, that's a good spot to end it. But, yeah, if you don't know about what happened with Stephanie, definitely look that up.
Okay.
Because it's a part of, it ties into why he finally said what he said in 2023. So
that's good to know.
Yeah. I was gonna ask if you were gonna talk about it or not, because it's important, but it also can be its own separate topic too. But it is just unfortunate.
Yeah, I'll definitely look it up now. About your topic for this week.
So my topic is called The Legend of Spirit Lake. And Spirit Lake is actually located in Kootenai County, Idaho. And I honestly just found this by looking up, like, scary stories or scary urban legends in Idaho. Because I don't think that's a state that I've really done a lot with. Or if I have, it's been a while. So the Kootenai County, Idaho, is a very, very small county. They actually, according to their 2010 census, had about 1,945 people living there. Granted, it's 13 years later, but still, it's always been known as kind of a very small town. Just a little bit of history about the town. It was platted in 1907 by engineers from Pennsylvania, and then the town was actually open to real estate investors in 1910. At that point, most of the streets and businesses and buildings and first houses were actually completed. And then they also had a railway where they had travelers come down from Spokane and that were discharged kind of near like the foot of the lake. There were eventually homes that were built on the lakeshore, and Spirit Lake eventually became a resort town. There was also a large sawmill that was built, and timber from the vast and previously untouched forest east of Mount Spokane and from Spirit Valley were sawed into lumber and then transported by rail cars on the Idaho and Washington North Railroad. And Spirit Lake has always been an attraction that does bring a lot of people to visit. So they would come by trains, planes, and everything. And eventually a lot of the vacationers would buy houses or have a summer house for several years. And then they would eventually become a year-round resident. The lake itself measures more than 4.5 miles long and is over a mile across the widest point with the surface area of 1,445 acres. And there's also 12 miles of shoreline. And it is reputed to be one of only two lakes in the world that have a sealed bottom, which kind of goes into the story a little bit later. So the legend has it that the lake before it was called Spirit Lake was actually once called Clearwater. But unfortunately, a tragic story by the Kunitai Indians, who once lived there by the lake, had the name changed to Lake of the Spirits. So essentially what happened was a chief of the Kunitai tribe had a daughter by the name of Haya Pam, which I guess translates to fearless running water, who loved a young Kunitai warrior by the name of Hasht Il Amhum, or Shining Eagle. But unfortunately, the daughter was promised to a rival tribe's chieftain as more of a peace marriage with her father, who arranged it to avert a war. So the two young lovers then vowed their eternal love nonetheless. And what they decided to do was they ran to the lake and they bound themselves together with what is referred to a marriage chain of rushes, and then they both leapt into the lake. The two lovers were never found, and the local folklore says that on moonlight nights, when the wind is still, you can still see their ghostly silhouettes as they drift slowly across the lake in a phantom canoe. And then the locals say that every spring you can hear a low, mournful, and very haunting sound can be heard drifting through the foggy mist that hovers above the water. Many claim that the voices are actually the cries of the two Native American lovers as they seek the freedom from the Lake of the Spirits, but unfortunately that never came. And going back to it being one of two lakes in the world that have a sealed bottom, that may also be a reason for the phantom spirits that are said to haunt the lake or the waters. Because of just how the bottom is essentially sealed. So, yeah, that is the story of the legend of Spirit Lake.
I always like stories like that, even though they're kind of sad, but they're kind of like romantic too in a way.
Yeah, it's very short, but I thought it was kind of a little bit different and sad, but also like, you know, they really wanted to be together and people still see stuff and they still hear stuff from the lake. And so it happened.
Did you say it's not a man-made lake, right? You said it's like sealed on the bottom?
It's sealed on the bottom. So
what does that mean? Is there a cork?
Let me check. If the bottoms are sealed or if the bottom waters are sealed off from the atmosphere, it means they can't mix with the surface waters due to temperature difference in the summer. So I don't know, but if you type in like sealed bottoms of lakes, Spirit Lake does come up, and that is basically what it's, aside from the legend, that's what it's known for, is having that type of a bottom.
There's always a thing with like bodies of water and ghostly apparitions and whatnot. Like some people say it's because of what the minerals or whatever, like
Yeah.
Like, that's what more skeptics say, but...
Yeah, they also...
That always is, like, a thing, it seems like.
Yeah, that's also a thing where if you live near, like, a river, and if your water, mm-hmm. I don't know, is, like, river water or something to do with the minerals, like, it's more susceptible to attract, like, ghostly apparitions, kind of. So I don't know. Yeah, there's something...
with the energy of the water, too, I think, if it's moving.
It's also just, like, it is a sad story. But it is interesting how there are a lot of kind of similar stories to that where people can't be together. So they decide they're going to leave
mm-hmm.
or they decide that they're, you know, going to move on to the next life together. So.
How did you find out about it? Oh, yeah. The largest Iowa.
Oh,
it's in Idaho and Iowa.
I don't know. I thought it was in Idaho. Yeah, it's in Idaho.
It does say Idaho, but the link I clicked on, okay.
I don't know. There's Iowa and there's Idaho, and this is in Idaho. Because I'm always afraid I'm going to mess that up.
Yeah, I was just reading about the history of it, but I guess that was the Iowa one. Well, the Iowa one's man-made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think the one in Idaho is... Hold on.
Are the states near each other? I don't know geography.
No, it says that due to glacial activity during the last ice age, it formed much of the area between Sandpoint and Spokane, thus creating prairies, basins, and lakes, including both the Penned Oriole and the Spirit Lake. So it is not man-made.
Maybe it's like in like New England when they use like the term Crystal Lake a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure it is. I'm sure. Because I actually, like, I didn't fully read everything, so I thought the town was also, like, called Spirit Lake. The town is not called Spirit Lake. Because sometimes they do that.
Yeah, there is a city in Idaho called Spirit Lake.
Oh, okay. Well, this said
what's going on here?
I don't know. This said it was in a county.
It's 100 feet deep. That's deep for a lake, right, Dave?
100 feet?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty deep.
It says it's located in Kootenai County, which makes sense because it was the Kootenai Native American tribe. So that makes sense. I don't know. This is where, like, you look one thing up in America, and then you click on a link, and then you realize there's something else in America that's very similar.
There's so much stuff in America.
Like, if you're looking up, like, I don't know, Easton, Maine, and you accidentally click on a link for, like, Easton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Oh, according to this random Reddit page I just clicked on about this ghosts and stuff, people said there were negative energies because there's an old KKK compound there.
I did not read that. But that would make sense.
It has 11 upvotes.
Yeah, I did not get that far into looking at Spirit Lake.
Interesting.
So I guess I'll wrap it up. Unless you wanted to add anything.
Now I'm reading this. I think you already said this, but it says, like, it talks about the tribe, the Kootenai tribes, and then the chief's princess daughter marrying the prince of the enemy tribe. It's kind of like Romeo and Juliet-esque.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking, too, where I was like, oh, this is the star-crossed lovers. That is in everywhere.
But. Legend has it, you will see the two of them in a canoe with mist all around.
Yep.
And then a 7-year-old boy was swimming in the shallow part, got tangled in the weeds and drowned.
Oh, I didn't read that.
There were many deaths and memorials around the lake. It's exceptionally weird because I've been to many lakes in North Idaho being an avid fisher, and none have as many memorials or graves as this. Lake bottom is very muddy and stuff doesn't root well there, so he finds it odd how someone could have drowned from getting tangled in weeds.
Well, if it's a kid.
Yeah, so then it talks, this guy's like hypothesizing about it. And then he talks about witches or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't read about witches. Anyway. I just read about the Native American story. That's it. Because that's what kept coming up.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay. All right. Well, everyone, thanks for joining us for another fun episode of Oi with the Terror. We drop an episode every other Thursday. You can find us on Instagram at Oi with the Terror Podcast. We are also on Facebook, which is still at Oi with the Terror already. If you have any topics you want us to discuss or talk about, or if you have any own personal stories yourselves, please send us an email at oiwiththeterroralready@gmail.com. And you can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever podcasts are really available. And we will see you all next time.
Bye.